Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com. This podcast is sponsored by Montana's great state parks. Visit fwp.mt.gov.
Searching for adventure that supports local community, boosts the economy, and gets you outside? Get away to one of Montana's 55 state parks. For events, park guidelines, and more, visit fwp.mt.gov/stateparks. See you out there.
I like stories that start out a recent Montana Supreme Court ruling, because there's a lot of impact in what follows. But this one overturned a law requiring written consent from parents before minors could receive an abortion. The ruling seemingly placed the state in front of parental rights when it comes to medical decisions regarding their minor children. Going to look into that consent law and the court's decision today. It's going to have a lot of impact. Derek A. Stryker is with us from the Montana Family Foundation. He's their legal counsel. We'll have some counsel for us on this one. There was this Supreme Court ruling not long ago. We kind of hit on it a little bit here. The Supreme Court ruled in a case regarding, it's a consent law that goes back to 2013, 36-page decision. I did not read it all. I read the synopsis. I have a lot of questions regarding it. The first one that I throw out there is if, you know, they use that provision in our Constitution about privacy. Aren't they violating that same Privacy Act in our Constitution when the state gets in between the parents and the minor children in when it regards to medical decisions? I don't care what it is, whether it's an abortion, gender transition, whatever, an abscess tooth. Parents need to have that, and the Supreme Court has it's been so well established over the years. Let me just welcome Derek A. Stryker, legal counsel, Montana Family Foundation, as I probably am going to just start getting into it here a little bit. Derek, how you doing, sir?
Oh, Tom, thanks so much for having me on again. Really appreciate the opportunity, and I wish it was under different circumstances. I wish we were celebrating a completely different order, but I read the whole opinion, so you don't have to.
I'm sure you, thank you. That's where the legal counsel comes in.
That's right.
So I counted on you to read that whole thing. And so, you know, in that, I guess my first question is, are parental rights well established in the Supreme Court? I've got some documents here that noted a number of cases. I looked at that last week, but I didn't really expound upon it here on air. Sure. But it seems to me that there are rules. I don't see a constitutional amendment that codifies this. But we'll get into this ruling. Are parental rights really well established?
Well, parental rights are really well established, dating back to English common law and William Blackstone's commentaries on English common law, you know, centuries ago. It's always been well respected and well established in our law that parents have a right to direct the upbringing and the moral upbringing and the education of their children, and to assist their children in making important healthcare decisions. So this is a long established principle, and it's been recognized in virtually every other state, because other states have addressed similar consent or parental notice laws when it comes to minors obtaining an abortion. And every other state that's looked at this has said this passes constitutional muster. The one concern that's often raised is, well, what about parents who might not be acting in the best interest of their children? Well, this law, like all the other laws that have been upheld, contained a judicial bypass mechanism, which said, look, if the child is concerned that the parents aren't going to act in their best interest, they can go to a judge and they can bypass that parental consent. So this law had that mechanism in there. Our Montana Supreme Court unanimously, and I think it's important to note that this was a unanimous decision. All seven justices agreed that your parental rights take a back seat to a child's constitutional rights, and that minors now have the same rights as adults. And so this has far-reaching implications.
What? How would others? Well, let's go back to the case.
Sure.
2013 consent law. What was in that consent law that they found unconstitutional?
Well, so this goes back even further than 2013,
yeah.
Believe it or not. This goes back to 2012, and we had 73% of Montanans vote on this very issue, 73% in favor of parental consent before a minor girl obtains an abortion, 73% of Montanans. I don't think that figure's changed much because parental rights are a very strong issue, and parents care very deeply about exercising their parental rights. So then in 2013, we had the legislature pass the parental consent law as a result of that 73% vote, and it was immediately challenged. So it's had a tortured history. It's been making its way through the courts at a painfully slow pace, and there is actually some recognition in this Supreme Court opinion, at least a passing reference to kind of an apology in the concurrent opinion from Justice Rice, basically saying, sorry, the judiciary took so long to issue this decision. You know, here we are 11 years later.
What's with that? I mean, I'm sorry.
I wish I could tell you. It went through, I think, 8 different district court judges who just sat on it, didn't rule. You know, and you can take your guess as to why. They didn't want to touch this. They didn't want to be the ones striking down parental rights in Montana. So it eventually made its way to back. It was started in Lewis and Clark County. Then it went over to Missoula County. It came back to Lewis and Clark County after a decade. It finally made its way to District Court Judge Abbott here in Lewis and Clark County. He issued a decision, and it was finally appealed up to the Supreme Court. So it took more than a decade from start to finish. And of course, now the law has been deemed unconstitutional.
What? Go ahead. Yeah.
Oh, go ahead, Tom.
Well, no. What's unconstitutional about the law?
Well, what they're saying is that a minor has the same rights as an adult, and because in our Montana Constitution we have an express right of privacy in our Constitution, minors have that right of privacy, and it cannot be, thwarted by parents exercising their fundamental right to parent. So essentially you have two fundamental rights here, a fundamental right to parent, and you have a fundamental right to privacy. And it's, we can get into this too, Tom, but since the 1999 decision in Armstrong, that right to privacy has just expanded and expanded and expanded. This is the result. Bad law begets bad law. So we have a right to privacy guaranteed to minors that eviscerates parental rights now. It was put up against parental rights and it won, according to our Montana Supreme Court. So because minors' rights to privacy trump the requirement that parents consent before their minor daughter obtains an abortion, that was found to be unconstitutional.
Montana Supreme Court has struck down an abortion law requiring parental consent for minors to get an abortion. It has far-reaching implications. Derek Astriker is with us, legal counsel for the Montana Family Foundation, as we mull this one over. And Derek, I go back to this whole right of privacy thing. It's very, very loosely defined, so watch out for loosely defined constitutional amendments like you're going to find in CI 128. Hopefully you have some time to talk about that.
Oh, absolutely.
But it just seems like this has been stated that the privacy rights of children, minor children, outweigh the privacy rights of parents in guiding their minor children. Is that fair? And that would, I think, be cause to take this to the higher court, which they may or may not accept something like this because it's Montana law decided by a Montana Supreme Court. The Supreme Court of the United States tends to leave those things alone. But it seems like we've got a conflict here of fundamental rights.
Yeah, we certainly do. And, you know, we have a long history in this country of passing laws to protect minors from their own immaturity. Yeah. You know, minors can't purchase alcohol. They can't go get a tattoo. They can't get married. Minors can't work. You know, this decision calls into question our child labor laws. You know, if there's an 8-year-old Montana boy who wants to go work in the mines, you know, this case is actually good precedent to say that our child labor laws are unconstitutional. I don't know that the state could mount a defense. Child marriage laws. If we have two young people who don't have their parents' consent to get married and they're minors, again, this decision might be a really big hindrance for the state to mount a defense to those laws that are designed to protect minors. So, you know, in this case, the state argued that they were protecting minors from a lot of different things. First was sexual victimization. There's evidence that minors are being trafficked and taken to abortion clinics, and people are lying about, you know, being their parents. So that was one reason. Protecting minors from psychological and physical consequences of abortion procedures, protecting minors from their own immaturity, and then promoting parental rights. And so the court analyzed each one of those reasons, those stated reasons, and said, well, those may in fact be compelling reasons, but the state hasn't articulated that the consent law is narrowly tailored to achieve those results. So essentially, it's just impossible for the state, for any law that's going to protect minors in the state of Montana. I'm not sure that our state Department of Justice can raise a defense as to why we would have a law to protect minors in the workplace or from making a decision to get married, et cetera. That's one of the far-reaching implications of this decision.
Wow. And it also codifies, or maybe that's not the right word, but there's a court ruling that states that abortion then is safe. Abortion care is safe and prevents relatively minimal health risk. That's right. That's what the Supreme Court said in this ruling, but it doesn't consider the psychological or mental health conditions. I don't think it really considers the entire medical procedure here as well as being entirely safe. How troublesome is that?
Well, it's very troublesome because, first of all, to reach that conclusion, and by the way, Justice McKinnon, who wrote for the majority in this opinion, mentioned the so-called safety of abortion multiple times in this opinion. And in doing so, had to reject evidence put forth by the state in this case demonstrating that abortion can be unsafe, yes, particularly for minors, because there was evidence submitted by the state. But I'll just quote from the opinion, quote, "The evidence establishes with no genuine dispute of fact that abortion care is one of the safest forms of medical care available in this country and the world," end quote. And so what that said to me is that our Supreme Court, at least the current court, just fully embraced the abortion industry death cult in this opinion. They find abortion to be completely safe. There are no long-term consequences to anyone who obtains an abortion, and minors are fully equipped to make this decision without any guidance or input from their parents whatsoever. And in fact, guidance and input from their parents could in fact violate the minors' constitutional rights in Montana. That's what this opinion says. And I think it's a very dangerous ruling with far-reaching implications.
And going further into that, then, what comes? I mean, how do you stop? How do you stop what may be further abuses from this? Say that you don't get resolutions. You know, and I know that the courts are what they are. I've seen a lot of legislating from the courts. I've just seen, I think, a lot of things that are not completely black and white. Yeah, and I know the courts can decide some of those gray areas too, but I don't know. Our court system does have certainly a big role to play in this. But you know, when does the metal meet the road on something like this?
Well, look, Tom, I think our courts are supposed to provide consistency and make consistent, well-reasoned rulings and reach well-reasoned conclusions. But when you know the outcome before the case goes up on appeal, you just don't know what reason they're going to give. But let me put it this way, Tom. It seems like our legislature is supposed to be given the presumption that laws that they pass are in fact constitutional, and that presumption is a difficult one, or should be a difficult one, to combat. The law is presumed to be constitutional, and the challengers are supposed to have the burden of proving that the law is unconstitutional. It seems like in Montana, at least in my experience over my career, that standard is kind of flipped on its head, that the law passed by our legislature is actually presumed by our courts to be unconstitutional, and the burden is on the state and the legislature to prove that somehow they passed a constitutional law. I think that's wrong, and that needs to change. It needs to go back to the standard that the law is presumed to be constitutional until a challenger proves that it's not.
Folks, if you're searching for some adventure that supports your local community and can boost the economy and gets you outside, have you thought about this? I'm sure you have. Montana's 55 state parks. Go visit a new one. For events, park guidelines, and more, it's easy to find. fwp.mt.gov/stateparks. And we'll definitely see you out there.
Summer may be winding down, but events in our Montana state parks are not. Join us at Chief Plenty Coup State Park to celebrate Native American heritage and culture. Mark your calendars for the Day of Honor on Saturday, August 31st during Labor Day weekend. Experience a vibrant parade starting and ending at the park with drummers, dancers, and speakers. The day concludes with an exciting cross-country meet. Heading into September, don't miss Native American Heritage Day on the third Friday of the month. Local schools will host a mini Day of Honor featuring a parade, traditional drumming, dancing, and more. And remember, all watercraft must stop at inspection stations. Help protect Montana's waters from aquatic invasive species. Together, we can keep our waters pristine. For more information on Montana State Parks and FWP outdoor activities and events, visit fwp.mt.gov/stateparks. See you out there.
Got a couple of calls. We won't have time to get to them, but Skip from Hamilton, thanks for listening, too. Of course, he's concerned. You know, there are two vacancies on that Montana Supreme Court that the voters have an opportunity to do something about here as we talk about a ruling that doesn't make sense to a lot of folk, as Derek Astreicher, who's with us here from the Montana Family Foundation Legal Counsel, had noted that this law was put forth by a public referendum. 73% of the general public favored this consent law. Derek, I know that this is at the moment sort of settled. One thing is not settled, CI-128, that people are voting on this, and folks need to go and look at this exact language. You know, what you might have signed up for when you signed the petition to put this on the ballot, and it made the ballot. That was just released today. But there's very, very loose language in this as well, and I've talked about it. Why don't you give your concerns about this one? Because as we look at the ill-defined right to privacy and how that has been, I think, manipulated by our Montana Supreme Court, that same opportunity exists with CI-128, I think.
Yeah, no, that's right, Tom. This entire thing is built on deception, okay? And so I appreciate the opportunity to spread some truth about CI-128. You know, first of all, you'll hear proponents of CI-128 and Montana Securing Reproductive Rights tell you that they gathered more signatures than any other ballot measure ever in the history of the state. That's not true. You know, from the Secretary of State's office, they they got this on the ballot, but by a pretty narrow margin, only a few thousand signatures over the minimum. So this wasn't, you know, the most signatures, the most certified signatures gathered ever. So that's line number one. Line number two is throughout the text of this constitutional initiative. You know, we've been telling folks, and I encourage your listeners to share this truth about CI 128. This is about no parents, no doctors, and no limits. No parents, as you can see, our Montana Supreme Court agrees that parental rights take a back seat to a minor's supposed constitutional right to abortion. And that would be the case if CI 128 passes as well. There wouldn't be parental consent, but there also wouldn't be parental notice, which is still being litigated in court right now. There's no doctors because the language of CI 128 allows for any treating, quote, healthcare professional. Well, what does that mean? Who knows? That could be your chiropractor. That could be an EMT. That could be your mental health counselor. It doesn't need to be a physician who makes a determination as to whether or not an abortion is medically necessary or should be conducted. And then no limits. This is the most important one because there are no limits to when an abortion can be conducted under the language of CI 128. There are no limits. It includes late term. It includes late term post-viability abortions. So if they tell you that this is just a codification in our Constitution of the Armstrong decision, all we're doing is putting in the Constitution what's already there. That's a lie.
Derek,
this is way beyond that.
We have a right in this country to draw our lines. And this is what we need to do here as well. I'm out of time on this one, but we're following the issue, and I know that you guys are involved in this as well with the Montana Family Foundation. Find out more. It's montanafamily.org. Derek, I appreciate the interview today and the conversation. And have a great summer, okay?
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Talk to you soon. Thanks for joining us for the podcast, and join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.